Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, September 25th, 2014. And with me today, I have two brilliant luminaries. John Martellaro, how are you, John?
Good morning. I'm good.
Awesome. And Dave Hamilton, thanks for joining me, Dave.
Ah, it's my pleasure to be here. I'm waiting to see who the two brilliant luminaries are that we've got with us today.
they're on the way. We're just filling in until they show up.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted both of you guys on today because there was this whole explosion on the internet overnight about this new security threat called shell shock. And I figured of all the people that I have available to me that you two would be the guys that would be able to carry on the most intelligent conversation about what's really happening. And since I wrote the article, maybe I can tag along and keep up too.
You can probably teach us some things too, Jeff, or certainly teach me some things. I know a little bit about this and just finished patching our web server so that the web server and all of the associated things that TMO runs from are no longer susceptible.
Which is fantastic.
Can you talk about that patch, Dave?
Sure.
How about if I give people a quick background so that they understand what you're talking about?
Yes, okay. Please.
So shell shock is a security flaw that's been found in the bash shell for Unix and Linux. And so as an average Mac user, you would encounter this if you launched Terminal. And you're using a shell to get at the Unix commands that you can type. And so this flaw allows an attacker to inject some code into special memory locations in Bash, and then those commands will be executed immediately without your interaction. And the end result is that an attacker could potentially just gain complete control of your system and then use it as they please without your knowledge. And while it's an issue for computers, it's also an issue for devices that have embedded Linux or Unix operating systems. So that means your router that connects your local network to the internet is a potential attack vector. Old devices that have embedded Linux as well, new smart home devices, all of these are potential attack points. And there we go. So that's a very encapsulated version of what we're dealing with.
The way it works is the attacker, or you, if you want to test it on your own system, you stuff an unexpected piece of data into an environment variable, which is an in-memory storage location that the shell uses. Bash is the shell that's affected by this, but it's a very common shell, and it's been around for about 25 years. And the presumption is that this hole has been around for 25 years. People just didn't realize it, and so therefore haven't used it. Somebody explained it like it's akin to realizing that for the last 10 years, the lock on your back door didn't work of your house. But you've never had a break-in, right? It's been this way.
So we should explain how that stuff process works, Dave.
Yeah. Do you want to explain that or do you want me to take it, John?
I'll start off. My first impression of it was that it has to come in through a CGI script through your browser, which loads, as you said, stuffs the environment variable. And my first question was, does sandboxing come into play to help that? Maybe, perhaps not. And second of all, it has to be a crafted website in order to do that. Unless, of course, it comes through by the infection process. Adam Christensen was talking this morning, and as you mentioned, you can infect router headers, and then it can pass through the DHCP protocol.
So, right.
So that's about what I know so far.
Yeah, I'm not. I have yet to think about a way where a website could do this. When I said I went and protected our web server, it was more about protecting our server from inbound attacks, not protecting our server from attacking outbound. Though, as you point out, it would be possible for someone to craft an attack in that then becomes a worm and turns itself around and attacks outbound. Now, how you could be attacked by visiting a website, I'm not so sure, because few websites that you visit cause any kind of shell script to run on your computer. If you run CGI on a website, that's running potentially a shell script on the web server, but not on your computer. So you, in theory, could attack a web server via CGI, but it couldn't attack you that way. But unless you've got some browser plugin that allows shell access or uses shell access. And this is where it gets interesting, because programmers have known for a long time that allowing shell access to a computer is a bad thing. But it's often, when you're writing scripts, invoking the shell is often the easiest way to get something done. So we all do it, even though in the backs of our minds we know, that technically this might open up a hole, but I'm not worried about it, right? Well, you know, that's how things start. Right.
That's why I'm a little bit worried about that test script, because it's sort of after the fact. It says if you manage to launch something inside the terminal, you'll get a vulnerability, but you got to actually load the environment variable first. And so that test is sort of after the fact kind of thing.
It doesn't show that you've been infected. It shows that you are running a susceptible version of Bash. And what
But you got to get it loaded. You got to get the environment variable loaded up correctly, and that's the first part of the process.
Correct. Yeah. So yeah, what you're doing is typically environment variables are built to hold data like my name or what editor I want to use, the path to an editor that I want to use when I edit text files. Right. Those are the types of things that get stuffed into environment variables. As it turns out, you can stuff commands into an environment variable, and as it turns out, in affected versions of Bash, those commands are run immediately. Now, where that becomes a problem is, let's say you're running an FTP server, right? Which we do. And that FTP server has to run as the root process because it needs to assume the permissions of a variety of different users. Well, if you can get in through that FTP process and stuff an environment variable, you've now stuffed an environment variable that can run as full root privileges. And that's where this stuff gets dangerous. Now, it requires a lot of other holes. Did we patch Bash? Yes. Was I worried that the FTP client or the FTP server that we use is also vulnerable such that it would allow the stuffing of an environment variable? No, right? You know, so is that a potential hole? Well, sort of, but not really, because you need a way in. You need something that's going to stuff it. So I think the biggest vulnerability for websites is when someone has developed their own custom scripts, which we all do. Right. But, you know, not some existing service that's running everywhere, but that one little script that you wrote that only you use and that no one else beats on. And perhaps no one even knows exists. But if someone did know it existed and knew how you wrote it, they would know, okay, there's this possibility of if I, instead of typing in my name when I sign up for your mailing list, now I type in quote rm-rf/, right, which tells the system to delete everything, I know that it's going to try and run that command as whatever user the web server is. Now, in our case, the web server runs as a very protected user, again, in a sandbox, and that sandbox would protect us here because it's in as an environment variable, so it doesn't run as root. It would run as the web server. Now, it could delete any files that the web server had access to, and it could run other things on there and potentially then run something that ran, that it affected somebody else that visited the website. So all of this is possible, which is why we went and patched it. And the patch was very simple because we run CentOS. It was literally a one-line command using the Yum package manager to update it.
Dave, do you foresee the environment variable executing and then inserting malicious code in your system and then erasing the environment variable, leaving no traces?
Oh, yeah, that's totally, that's actually a really good idea. That would be the way I would write it. Yeah, that's right. There you go. Yeah, but again, you know, I really want to stress that I don't think users like the Macs that we have at home are not accessible to the outside world in that we're not running web servers on them. We're not running file sharing. Now, this all gets more interesting when you add IPv6 into the equation if you're not blocking inbound IPv6 connections, because then your Mac is accessible. But most of us are, even if we're running IPv6 by default, we're blocking those inbound connections. So that's okay.
Okay.
But we're, you know, but where it gets, where, so it, I'm not really worried about our Macs at home. But if you're running OS X server, I would worry about that.
Okay. Now, what about our Macs that we take out of our homes? Like I go to the coffee shop to watch people do stupid things and then write about it. And I take my MacBook Air along. Do you see this as a potential security or shell shock issue for people like me that are going to go and hang out at a coffee shop and use our Macs there?
Potentially, yes. And here's why. This was spurred on, this line of thinking was spurred on by the conversation we had with Adam Christensen in our staff meeting today that John mentioned. But when your Mac connects to the internet or the Wi-Fi connection at a coffee shop, it requests an IP address from the router in the coffee shop. And that uses a process called DHCP. And DHCP is a command line client. There's a little daemon that is fired off, and it goes and says, "Get me an IP address." So if there are no known exploits of this bug yet. You can test for it on your own system, but to our knowledge, no one has exploited this yet. They will.
Oh,
because it's just how it works, right? But this is a, we found the bug and are patching it, hopefully before it becomes a widespread issue. But if someone were to figure out a way that if they sent the right data back or the wrong data back to your DHCP request, if DHCP happens to be stuffing environment variables, the client on your Mac, and I don't know if it does, but if it did, then yes, you could have a nefariously programmed DHCP server that could then infect the clients, that could then turn around and potentially infect the servers. But all of these things require one of two things. In order to exploit this bug, you either need shell access on a computer, which most of us don't give to people we don't trust anyway, right? So you either need shell access, at which point having this bug is irrelevant because you've already got shell access. All you're doing with the bug is running things that the shell that you could run from the shell. So if you have shell access, it's sort of a you're past that point. Or you need to be running a service that uses Bash to run shell scripts. CGI is one of those things. So web servers definitely need to be updated. But again, it requires, you know, that the script was written lazily, which we all do. But typically, it doesn't last. The laziness of in the script doesn't last when something becomes used on a wider scale.
Hey,
so,
Dave,
go ahead.
I'm looking at the Unix permissions on /bin/bash.
Yeah,
and it's world executable. I wonder if it's useful to change security settings on Bash to make it only executable by yourself.
Well, you'd probably break a lot of things because there are things that use it. I mean, it's triggered by all your cron scripts. It's triggered by a lot of different things, right? Your Mac's daily, hourly, daily, and weekly I forget what they call them, the maintenance scripts, right? Those are all run and are triggered through a shell script that runs inside Bash.
As a user not in your group.
Yeah. Well, it runs as the root user. So, I mean, you know, and that's where it gets dangerous, right? Is because there are a lot of things that run as the root user as Bash. So let's say there is no hole to stuff into Bash. However, there's a hole to access that script file. So you could access the file. But then again, you're past this bug. You're already there. And that's how a lot of people have attacked Unix systems over the years, is if let's say your weekly maintenance script if that is writable by the world, and you know that once a week it's run as a root user, what you do is you edit that script and you say, hey, I'm going to add a line to the script that says, give my Dave account root privileges. And then you just wait until the cron script runs as the root user and it does exactly what it's told. So you got to, and that was an early hole. Like Newt Sears and those guys were the ones that really kind of figured all that stuff out, right? And yeah, so there you go. I won't talk about
what we should be looking for a bash update from Apple soon, right?
As bingo.
As a Mavericks update. It may not be very clear. It may say something like, you know, OS 10.9.5 update version 2 security patches or something like that.
Yeah. But
it may not call out bash when Apple doesn't tend to do that.
They don't tend to do that. No. And that's what I
should be looking for one.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I mentioned package managers. You know, we use the Yum package manager because that's what works with CentOS. And so we ran that. But because Red Hat had staged this update. So all you needed to do was update bash and it would say, yeah, actually there is an update and here it is. OS X's package manager, aka software update, does not have anything for this yet. But it you know, it's a good way to think about it because OS X is just Unix with a really fancy package manager and a GUI on top of it, and the package manager is called Software Update.
Right. Okay. So for the average user, for our end users, they need to be watching to see when Apple rolls out a security update in the very near future, and that will probably be the update that fixes the bash issue.
Yep.
And then, of course, we will be paying attention for that, too. So even if you, our listeners, have missed seeing that the update is out, we will have an article on the Mac Observer so that you'll know that it's there so you can go in and install your updates.
And maybe we should link to it. I know someone out there published instructions on how to compile or how to patch bash on your Mac.
Those instructions are in our article already?
Already. Okay, perfect. There you go.
We are so on top of it, Dave.
Yep. Yep. So if you want to fix this on your own, you can. It's trivial to fix this. It really, really is. I mean, I you know, with the package update, it took 5 seconds, and would probably take you less than 10 minutes to do this patch manually on your Macs. So,
right there you go. So we're out of time, but. Thank you so much for both of you for joining me today, because there's a lot that I knew about this, but I knew that with both of you guys here, we'd be able to get even deeper and really explain a lot of what's happening to our listeners. So thank you, John, for joining me.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Dave, too. And I really appreciate all of the in-depth knowledge you guys have on topics like this.
Yeah, fun stuff. Yeah, this was a pleasure.
Scary, man. Scary.
But also pretty cool.